Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time to look at the offense from that week six 17-3 loss to the Rams. Here to do that with me is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing all right. Thank you for having me on. Maybe not the best week to talk about the Ravens offense, but somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, it's. I appreciate you being willing to do it, frankly. And this is a difficult season, obviously, for the Ravens. Let's start with a little bit of an absurdity that doesn't directly deal with the Ravens. But they signed C.J. Gardner-Johnson to the practice squad as a safety maybe 2-3 weeks ago at this point. And he has now gone the way of the dodo. According to his agent, he and the Ravens reached an amicable agreement to part ways. And all that shows up on the Ravens Twitter feed is that they've released Gardner Johnson.
Yeah, it's a little surprising, but could be a lot of different reasons why. You know, possibly just like this team isn't very good. And I don't want to be involved in it. I think the reason given by the by the agent makes sense. You know, he thought he was going to potentially be given a chance to start and then go and trade for Gilman, and that's pretty much out the window unless there's an injury that happens. And he wants to play, so I can understand that.
Yeah, well, I can too on that level. Just seems very Deontay Johnson-esque, particularly if it's about playing time or targets or whatever. Yeah. So anyway, hope he does nothing with the rest of his career. No hard feelings at all. Ravens suffer another 2-score loss here. Another fairly lifeless offensive performance. I think we could agree without Lamar. This one, a little more ability to drive the ball up the field, which was something. They got some, Derrick Henry had his best game since the opener. Certainly looked the part again of who we expected Derrick Henry to be. But then a lot of other position groups did not come through. Wide receiver, tight end, quarterback, offensive line to make it not work out.
Yeah, I think, it was a game that kind of gave me some hope, watching it in the first half. They looked like they were able to, like you said, move the ball. They had a couple of decent drives. Obviously this is an offense pod, but defense played better. I think there's a chance that this was a game the Ravens could have won, and then they just made too many mistakes in the end. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, definitely. The Rams also made a lot of mistakes in this game, which kind of kept the Ravens in it. But the Ravens ended up making more, and that certainly was a big deal. Very disappointed to see Ronnie Stanley leave this game early for the second time in 3 weeks. So he's early departure after 15 snaps. Then he missed the game entirely. Then an early departure after 21 snaps. Things do not seem right with that ankle. And he's doing everything to try and play. When he's in there, he's been absolutely awful. Not himself at all. So I understand in both cases, whoever made the decision to pull him, whether that was the coaches or Stanley himself, I think it might have been Stanley himself in this game, they made the right call based on what was happening on the field.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously something that's been plaguing him for a while. I mean, he was healthy last year, but, dating back to 2022, 23, coming off the injury, he had ankle injuries, obviously the knee injury as well. When he's healthy and he's at his peak performance, he's still one of the best, I think, left tackles in the league. But if he's not healthy, we've seen his play fall off a cliff. So hopefully, maybe a calculated kind of decision here. If he's not at 100%, he's not able to play his best. He have the bye week coming up and get back to being who he wants to be and who the Ravens frankly need him to be in order for them to, anchor at least the left side of the offensive line.
Yeah, we'll talk about their level of desperation when we get the offensive line in the second part of the show, of course, but they really need him, no doubt about it. Game, unfortunately, the Ravens lose it. It could have reestablished themselves as contenders, I think, pretty squarely with a win like this. An upset win over the Rams as 7-point dogs would have raised them to 2-4. They'd have been in a much better position in terms of the division, certainly, and potentially even the wild card. I think their best chance is still to win the division at this point, in my opinion. How do you feel about that?
I agree. The division is very weak this year. Obviously, Bengals out, down bad without Joe Burrow. Steelers, they have the record, but they're a mirage. I think they could have easily be 1-4 at this point. They've won a lot of close games, and they frankly haven't looked that good in a lot of ways. So this definitely was an opportunity for the Ravens to steal a win, I think. But yeah, it's unfortunate. They were really going to have to crawl their way out as the second half of the season.
It would have been a good place to start the turnaround. And now they're putting a lot of weight on a game against not a bad team. The Bears are not that bad. They're 3-2 coming into this game, and they just beat the Commanders in a game. This is not going to be an easy one, even at home. The Ravens, you know, one of the things that hasn't been talked about really too much, the Ravens played 4 out of 6 at home and lost 5 out of 6. That's a bad combination.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can look at the record, you can point to the teams they've played and say these are, you know, probably all winning teams by the end of the season. You know, they have it. This is the hard stretch. We knew that was going to be the hard stretch going into the year. And I think a lot of people still thought the Ravens would come out, you know, probably 4 wins maybe at the end of this stretch. But obviously, you know, with Lamar's injury and some of the defensive issues, it's been kind of a disaster. But it's there's the fortunate thing is, you know, they probably still have a chance with the schedule the way it's going to fall out. There's still some tough teams. I mean, a lot of teams that are surprising this year. I think they may be better than what we looked at or what we thought we looked at the schedule in the offseason. But still, I mean, you have a lot of the contenders, the best teams in the league that they've already played.
Right. And they certainly have 5 division games left, so they have some opportunities to make up some ground in the division, which is nice. Almost will need a head-to-head sweep against the Steelers as part of that to win the division, I think. If you got to there, it's not too long of a leap of faith to believe they could do it. Kind of had a turning point at the end of the first half. They got down to the 1-yard line on second down. So they got down to the 4-yard line. Henry had a 3-yard run, looked fine on first down, got it to the 1, and they had 3 chances to bash it in. They went twice with Mark Andrews under center with the tush-push plays. Something I noticed about this I want to hear your opinion on, but then they went with Henry off tackle, and they happened to go to the side where the Rams were completely overloaded to that side pre-snap. It looked to me like there's only 3 guys to the right of center, and one guy basically over the nose and 7 guys to the left of center. And the Ravens were 1 more on the left side than on the right side, but they weren't, you know, they weren't overloaded the same way the Rams were, and a big missed opportunity to score there.
Yeah. It was, I think, a massive failure. And it's one of the issues I think the Ravens have had all season, even before Lamar got hurt, was the short down, short yardage situations. They just haven't been very good. And that's really offensive line not being able to win, like move the person in front of you. They haven't really done that very well. They miss Patrick Ricard a lot in those situations as well. And then for the tush push, you know, the thing that I don't like about it is you still have Cooper Rush on the field. He's doing nothing. So you don't really have that numbers advantage that like the Eagles, for instance, have. You know, they have a very strong physical quarterback, and then they have guys who are pushing him. When you have Rush out there, he's just standing there doing nothing. So you don't really have that numbers advantage. And they're compressing literally 11 guys into this tiny space. It's crazy how tightly packed they are, like literally like sardines into like a tin can. And they were unable to get any push at all on either of those two tush push attempts. And then the, like you said, the Henry play just got blown up from the start. Never had a chance.
The on the 2 tush push plays, you could tell the Rams had recently played the Eagles and practiced to defend the tush push. I mean, they were as tightly packed as I have ever seen the defensive bodies against an offense, period. I mean, it wasn't like there was anybody who was kind of like waiting to pounce and when everybody's right on top of the line of scrimmage and it, you know, basically between the tackles. So it just they were begging the Ravens to try for some sort of play action. They had a 6th offensive lineman on the field for I think they might have only had a 6th offensive lineman on the field for the last play when Bullock was out there. But they were begging for an eligible throw to an eligible receiver who, you know, pretended to miss a block, as if that would be anything that would really draw any attention on the Ravens right now and go up. But they didn't try anything like that.
It would have been nice to do something creative out of that look, especially when you're doing the exact same thing 2 times in a row, to show it once and line up like you're doing it again and just, you know, like you said, have someone leak out. There just seemed to be a massive lack of creativity in this game across the board.
All right. I thought on the first drive, they did a very good job of play calling. And one of the things I really liked is that they were alternating a little bit between base and nickel, and it wasn't entirely dependent on down and distance. So they had some nickel out there on first down. The Ravens ran against that. And then when they played base, the Ravens threw against that. And they didn't throw successfully, by the way, in that first drive, but they still tried it in those situations. And I thought they moved down the field very effectively, largely with Henry just running the ball and the Rams being unable to stop it. But that drive is the best they've looked with Cooper Rush, even better than the first drive of his first game, which was also not bad in terms of driving down the field.
Yeah. The scripted drives under Monken have tended to be pretty good, but especially this season, it seems like he's lost his kind of magic touch, his pulse on what's happening within the offense, within the way the defense is playing them. And it just seems like there's no kind of counterpunch after that. You know, you set something up, but then you don't actually follow through with it. Obviously, that first drive was derailed by penalties, two penalties that really killed it. Mm-hmm. And when you're up against so many other issues within your offense, you can't make those kind of mistakes and expect, you know, to win games. Frankly, it's really hard just to surmount them. Even when you have an MVP quarterback, when you have Cooper Rush out there, it's really Tyler Huntley. Yeah, it's almost impossible.
They won the snap count 75-51. That had been a very big deal. In fact, that was one of the real keys to the defense not being overworked in this game, was to win snap count. And the defense ended up with only seven players for the front five, which for a rotational team, I know there's some people who, you know, maybe new to football or whatever. Not too many new people new to football listening to this podcast, frankly. But four defensive linemen is just one of the things that gets me absurdly soapboxing. So I'll try not to do that again. But they also lost Tavius Robinson during the game, who's their most heavily used front five defender. So between the outside linebackers on either side and the three defensive linemen, I mean, he had 80 more snaps than anybody else so far on the season. So to lose him, not only is it was a disaster for this game, I think it really hurt, but it's a disaster for any time he misses as well. They are going to be scrambling like hell to figure out how to replace him.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what happens when you can actually run the ball effectively. You know, you can grind out plays, you can keep long drives going because defenses get tired when you're constantly running at them. And we've seen that so effectively for the Ravens over the years when they've been able to build leads and run the ball, especially in the second half, and they just wear teams down. And then you'll get these sometimes big plays, you know, that come off of that just because teams are tired and they don't want to tackle anymore. In this case, you know, it was a mix of running the ball in the first half and in the second half, you know, they just, you know, had to kind of go into pass mode. But I think the Rams kind of, you know, they scored their points and then they said, this team isn't going to come back. And they just played a kind of a relaxed defense. And that, I mean, that's a whole other story, but yeah, it was not effective. And even with the added snaps that the Ravens got, it was enough to keep the defense fresh, but it didn't make the offense any more successful.
Well, that's true. And they certainly, they benefited from not only Rams miscues on the field, but the huge Rams coaching miscue. I still got to hear the explanation of why they went for it on fourth and three or whatever it was, when they had a chance for a chip shot field goal to go up 17 with 13-33 to go, I think it was. I mean, that would have been insurmountable lead. It seemed insurmountable at two touchdowns, but I don't know why you wouldn't think it was completely unreachable at three scores.
I honestly don't think that they had any respect for the Ravens offense. I really don't think they thought that the Ravens were going to score two touchdowns against them. And I frankly don't think they made a wrong choice necessarily. Give your opportunity, your team an your opportunity to, you know, go up three touchdowns. But I mean, either way, I think the game is over, but it didn't really matter. I don't think the Ravens were going to score all the way down the field. So it was probably slightly calculated, but I don't know. I think it's probably just saying, give my team a fourth down opportunity, maybe like preseason, see what they can do.
Wow. That is truly no respect. We stayed in our seats because of that. We stayed in our seats at that moment because they ran a fourth down play. They missed it. The Ravens had a chance down two scores. And then right away, Tyler Huntley runs into the game. So it's that much more exciting, in terms of what's going on. It's a very tough day for the offensive line. We're going to get to that in the second half of the show. But, one thing I'll say is it is normal that the offensive line is not completely responsible for pressure in a game, that a lot of that is either manufactured scheme where the defensive coordinator figures out a way to get a free runner on the quarterback from off ball, or you have some eligible receivers breaking down in their blocking assignments and being part of it. That really wasn't the issue at all. It was all on the offensive line. Plus the offensive line had six penalties, just an unbelievably bad day. And it was a lot of snaps, 75 snaps, but it was an awful lot of breakdowns in terms of pressure. And, you mentioned them, just taking it easy on their defense and whatnot when the Ravens had the football in the fourth quarter. I mean, their pass rush didn't take it easy. They were after Tyler Huntley. Boy.
No, but they weren't, like you said, they weren't blitz. I mean, they had a couple blitzes, I think, when the Ravens actually finally got down into the red zone. But generally speaking, it was a four-man rush. And they were they were doing some like stunts, some twists up front, and the offensive line was not handling it very well. But it was generally just losing one-on-one. A lot of it was no boom, honestly. He was bad, but Linderbaum wasn't much better. Rosengarten was much better. It was just a terrible day in the office for the Ravens' O-line.
Those were the big three in terms of losing their pass blocking assignments more than anybody else, though. Everybody had a little. Voorhees had several misses, although he didn't score badly. And Falele actually came out pretty clean in this one, but he had a ton of missed blocks. And that's been a frustration in general with Falele. We'll talk about him a little later. All right, Zay Flowers, very tough game for him. Obviously, didn't get charged with a fumble on the botched jet sweep play, but he deserved it. Ball was put right in his gut, and he couldn't hold on to it. And then he certainly, lost the ball after trying to make a few extra yards after contact.
Yeah, he also, I think, had an opportunity just to fall on the ball and on the jet sweep as well. Like, I mean, football, bounces away, but he had it kind of right in front of him, and it felt like he tried to scoop and make something happen instead of just land on it. He had a bad day outside of that. I thought, there's some. There's the fourth down play where I feel like he gave up on the route. It was the corner route that I don't think he was the primary target, but they doubled Andrews. I think was the primary read there, and there wasn't that much time, and Flowers was probably the next look, and he kind of just gave up. He didn't even he stopped on the route. And then the interception also seemed like kind of a lazy route. He didn't really cut it off very well. I think Tom Brady made a comment on it too. He said he thought that Flowers rounded the route off, didn't really give his quarterback much of a chance. It wasn't a great throw. I'm not trying to take blame away from Cooper Rush or trying to force it in there, but Flowers didn't help him out either. He just seemed like he was not plugged in this game.
Yeah, certainly not a great one. Henry, fairly effective given level two first contact on that first drive in particular, finally getting some first contact from linebackers, from safeties, rather than having it be a defensive lineman kind of dragging at him as he's, in the right at the line of scrimmage or even a little bit behind it. That's been a frustration so far this year. But that first drive, it honestly felt really good. It looked really good. I didn't have the confidence that the defense was going to get the job done against the Rams at that point. And then they played a great half of football. But to see the offense come out of the gate there was really terrific.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice first drive. And like I said, the Ravens tend to have pretty good first drives with, the scripted 15 plays or whatever they're doing, especially when they can run the ball. It makes it look that much better. Sometimes I'm a little grumpy because I feel like they can rely too much on the run. But when a game, that's been Lamar Jackson at quarterback, but when you have Cooper Rush, you lead into your best player on offense, and that's Derrick Henry, I think. So, I mean, you should be feeding him the ball. It was good to see them actually get some push in the offensive line. I think they had a better run-blocking game than a pass-blocking game. And, you know, we can go into some of the more specifics about it later, but I think that's something that they're going to have to lean into in the second half. It can't all be on Lamar. They need to find a way to kind of make that scheme work and make, you know, Henry the player that we saw last year when he was an explosive option. And teams were scared of having those two players touch the ball. And it seems like that went away.
There's two elements that should help with the second half with the run game better. The first is Patrick Ricard is practicing again. Having him back makes a lot of difference in terms of the run game. Gives you an extra, very useful point of attack player. So you don't, you don't let the one guy who has command of a gap or has responsibility for a gap necessarily make the block that or make the tackle that he should make. So you have that as one thing. And then the other thing is Lamar Jackson coming back. Yeah. Totally changes misdirection in the offense. They've got Keaton Mitchell too, by the way. They didn't use him in this game. Two snaps as a solo back, but he wasn't used as a flanker for any of the misdirection value there. The fact that they run that play with Flowers, I hate it on multiple levels. I really hate it because a running back's more likely not to fumble that football. Okay, that's just pure and simple. They take more handoffs. They're less likely to fumble that football. I think if you put Keaton Mitchell in that position, it's probably not going to end up on the ground. Might, but probably won't. And the other thing is you're losing Flowers, the receiver, and you're losing the opportunity for misdirection with a player like Mitchell. So many reasons why I don't want that play run by Flowers.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was another time when they have a drive where you have some momentum. You know, they put together a few first downs. They were, I think, around the 30-yard line. It was in, you know, close to scoring territory. And the game was still well within reach. I think it was 10-3 at that point. Mm-hmm. And we just haven't seen that been run effectively with the Ravens. You have a new quarterback, someone who's not very who isn't as proficient in ball handling as, you know, like as Lamar would be necessarily. And it's a timing play too. You know, you have to get the timing right on that. And if it's off by a little bit, something like that can easily happen. It's just not, seemingly not necessary.
Yeah. Certainly frustrating. I mean, this a lot of the frustrations are the Ravens are losing. Every fan, and I'm not excluding myself from this group, but I think every fan is frustrated, certainly with the results. There's an inherent desire as a fan to find the transient component that could be fixed that we think is at the heart of this whole problem. And there's just some unfixable problems with the current Ravens. The current set of injuries is just not resolvable, you know, with what they have. It may become resolvable when Lamar is back. Okay, but it's not resolvable right now. And the set of defensive injuries may not be resolvable, period, to have Madubuike out and Roquan out. And you know, some of the guys that we expected to produce in the secondary, like an Alexander, Chidobe Awuzie, you know, out. I mean, just Tavius Robinson out is just an enormous loss. It just may not be fixable. So the search for this and the search for blame to me is also kind of tiresome because we're trying to find somebody to blame who doesn't matter for the performance of the team on the field inherently as fans, because we want it to be turned around. So the first thing we want to do is blame the coaches because they can be replaced right midseason. The players can't be, not nearly as easily anyway, but the coaches can be replaced. But, you know, the truth of the matter is if injuries are the problem, this just once in a while when you roll snake eyes on a season and from injury perspective, you've lost, you've crapped out on that, in that role.
And I think injuries are definitely a huge factor for the team's performance this year. I think it's hard to appreciate the impact of Patrick Ricard until you don't see him mm-hmm. in the game. I think Mitchell Payton, is that how you pronounce the replacement for Ricard?
Zaire Mitchell Payton, yep.
Zaire Mitchell Payton. So one thing I noticed was he wasn't really out there in the first drive. It was mm-hmm. it was all 12 personnel with likely and Andrews and Kolar, there's some third, he was out there too. So it was mixing in the normal three tight ends. I think for them, that might've helped give you those potential numbers advantages in terms of the personnel that the Rams are using, because, you know, you have to kind of respect the pass catching ability of that personnel grouping as well. And I think that actually allowed them to loosen up the box a little bit and get some of those running lanes. So I like that. I like what they did there.
Yeah, completely agree, by the way. So if Zaire Mitchell-Payne, he played only like 9 snaps in this game, but if he was out there and, you know, he's not a receiving target at all, basically. Not that Kolar's been much of a receiving target this year either, but if you have Andrews and Likely out there or you have Andrews and Kolar out there, that 12 personnel is a hell of a lot different than a 12 personnel, which includes Zaire Mitchell-Payne, that's for sure. So you encourage the opponent to play base defense when you put ZMP out there on the field as part of 12.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to forget in a season that's gone so poorly for the Ravens that Isaiah Likely was missing for the first quarter of the season, and he was a big part of the offense last year, a big part of what they were doing, and even though he started off slowly last year, he picked up midway through the season, and he became a feature part of the passing game and also a very good blocker for them. There are some positive trends potentially, moving into the second half of getting him back, getting Ricard back, obviously Lamar back. But the offensive line also needs to improve. They just have to be better.
Yeah. And they probably will play better with Lamar just because Lamar makes everything easier. But they definitely have to play better. They did a better job in this game of manufacturing some third and manageable. The Ravens offense, it was terrible with Rush and it stayed poor with Huntley, even though Huntley gave him a little spark, converted a 4th and 12. I think he had another pass completion on 4th down for a first down. So he wasn't a zero in terms of making some big plays in this game, but he got sacked 4 times in 19 dropbacks. And you can't, or four, I think it was 4 out of 18 actually, because he had a spike in there in his passes. So that's ugly.
Yeah. I don't want to get too into it because I had some conversations on Twitter about this, and people thought that Huntley should have been the starter. There was a lot of, and my initial point is we've seen Huntley as a starter. It's not a good situation. I mean, maybe the Ravens offense is a little bit better in terms of personnel now than it was before, but Huntley can't throw the ball down the field. People forget that he's a check down quarterback, and yeah, he can pick up a few yards with his feet every now and again, but he is not have a good arm. He doesn't see the field well. He holds onto the ball. He takes sacks. And we saw that. We saw the whole Huntley experience in this game. He's not the answer. I mean, obviously, if Lamar has to miss more time, we'll see who the backup that comes in is. But he's not going to be someone who's going to be the difference in winning or losing games for the Ravens.
Right. I agree. And we've seen Huntley lose a lot of ball games for the Ravens when Lamar's been out in the past and not win very many. He can give you a few yards on the ground, but he's not nearly the kind of quarterback that Lamar is about escaping the pocket and about maximizing that opportunity. Very linear runner. Not a lot of juke to him, not a lot of wiggle to him in terms of avoiding an opponent. So it's not Lamar, the Maserati in third gear, who's just lining up the next man to miss and, reading his leverage and then making it happen. That's not who Huntley is. And he holds the ball way too long to try and be Lamar Jackson as a runner when he's not.
No. Yeah, completely agree. And your previous point about, the Ravens did a good.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Job of kind of staying a reasonable down distance early on. When Huntley was out there, it didn't go that way. It got into third and long, fourth and long, pretty much every drive because he's not decisive. For some reason, they took Derrick Henry. I guess they thought it was game over at that point, but they were using more like 11 personnel. They had Hill in there at some point. I think Ali was in there. Mm-hmm. So maybe they just threw in the towel at that point, but it was also a different defense at that point too. You know, they were just playing like kind of a very basic zone coverage, every single drop back, and it looked like, you know, they're just winning up front and didn't matter. And Huntley never had a chance.
Yeah, the game was actually still in doubt until the Huntley's until the drive stalled out on fourth down. With the first Huntley drive, which was 10 minutes. I mean, that drive was 10 minutes long, him driving him down from what, the 5 yard line or something where they had the sack, basically the length of the field. That Ravens had a couple penalties thrown in there. Huntley overcame some of that, but it's you know, good for trying it. Maybe in a sense, good for trying it just to shut the fans up. You know, I mean, Huntley's not the answer for Rush. You look at these two quarterbacks. There's nothing to choose from. Both of them are not going to be acceptable. Yeah. I don't think there's any reason why you take Huntley over Rush to start the next game if Lamar can't go.
Yeah, I agree. And Harbaugh made some comments about they were going to get Huntley into the game regardless. Didn't seem like Cooper Rush knew about that, according to his comments after the game. So that's an interesting little twist there, I guess. But then he said they'll also be evaluating the backup quarterback position over the bye week. So who knows? I mean, I guess there's only so many practice squad elevations that Huntley can have. So it's assuming if Lamar is back and healthy that they would keep Rush because of, you know, the contract they gave him as the backup quarterback. I think that's the smarter move, but you know, we'll have to see.
And they could bring somebody else in to be the backup quarterback on the practice squad and then elevate him. So it doesn't even have to be Huntley. Was somebody they brought in, you know, I think who understood the system, who knew what, you know, was basically happening here.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move forward a little bit and talk about the drives and how they worked out. Cause they had that first big drive. They drove down the field. It really fizzled out due to penalties at the end of that drive. And they had to accept a 3-pointer. Then if you look at the rest of their drives, they lost two red zone possessions on downs, including the one at the end of the first half, but also the Huntley drive.
Yep.
Then they lost two other possessions on downs, which is really, really bad to lose four. It means you failed four fourth down attempts in a game, that which is what they did. And they lost one at the LA 35, which was certainly the right decision to go for it. They lost another one at their own 42. And I'm trying to remember the circumstances. I don't remember if that was the last drive of the game or it was a little earlier on a fourth and two or something.
I think that was the last drive when they were just kind of in desperation mode. And there was like 40 seconds left. Yeah.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. And then three others they lost on turnovers. And then they punted the ball one time. So it's not like they didn't sustain some drives here by having a little bit of fourth down success. They certainly extended one drive anyway, at least, to get the defense off the field and a little more ready. It's just by the time they did that, it was the fourth quarter. And they were pretty much SOL at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the Ravens season in a nutshell. You know, it's missed opportunity after missed opportunity. They'd shoot themselves in the foot at every stretch of the way when they have a chance to you know, put together an important drive, you know, go ahead, win the game potentially. They find some way to not do that. That seems to be the theme of the season.
Yeah, we look for blame. That's all I can say. Maybe we'll come back to this. I want to move on to the quarterbacks right now. Rush, and I just grouped the quarterbacks because the performance was almost equally poor. So I'm not going to take a lot of time dissecting which of each of these two did. But talking about the numbers against the Ravens quarterback, the Rams rushed 3-1 time. It was a 10-yard play, but it ended at turnover. That was one of Flowers, obviously. Then they had four rushes 25 times. The Ravens gained a total of 87 yards on this play. 3.5 yards per play with two sacks. Completely unacceptable. The other team rushes four. You know, they're probably dropping into some sort of a soft zone. They're giving you yardage, generally speaking. The Ravens end up with 3.5 yards per play. Completely unacceptable. They rushed 10 times, 28 yards, 2.8 yards per play, one sack, one turnover in that group. That was the interception. So not acceptable, obviously. They rushed 6-1 time, and they got a sack for -8. So I struggle to find one of those where I like the results. And oftentimes you slice data down and you can at least find one, even statistically insignificant sample that you like within the set. But basically the Rams had their way with the Ravens, no matter how many they decided to rush, which was one of the big problems for the team, is they couldn't stop their four-man pressure. And that is one of the most important things you can do in football to play good defense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really hard to win any game if you get consistently pressured. And we've seen the O-line be a major factor for any team that is struggling there. I mean, we've seen very good teams fall apart or come up short in big games. I mean, we're thinking about the Kansas City Chiefs in two Super Bowls recently where they just got dominated up front and they lost because they couldn't protect their quarterback. It's no different for the Ravens in this game. It's no different for the Ravens this year, really. They have not been good in pass protection. And it's honestly a thing that has really been a hallmark of the Ravens' offensive performance. When they've had good, incredible offenses, they've often had really good offensive line performances. Yeah. So it's kind of difficult to understand why exactly everything fell apart this year, because the turnover in players isn't that significant. You wouldn't think. You would think that they have a young core of offensive linemen who should be kind of going up in
improving in their
career trajectories. And it seems like across the line, they're all going regressing, and it's just not great to see.
I mean, it is really strange because you got Stanley and you don't know what to expect because he could get old at any moment, and kind of the worst of all possible worlds has happened. He's gotten hurt again. He's been terrible when he has been able to play, which probably means he's going to have to be shut down at some point, I would have to think. At this point, I would really love to know that Stanley could come back and be the Stanley of 24 in 26. If he'd give me that deal right now, I'd sign it in blood, and expect nothing more from him the rest of this year. Because I don't think they're going to get that much more from Stanley this year, frankly. And even though that might be a losing proposition for the 25 Ravens, I still think it would be the deal to make if you could make it.
I would agree with that. I mean, I feel like positive outcomes of the season are the avenue to get to those positive outcomes is very limited. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to have a lot of things go right. And maybe that's how things change. You know, seasons can change on a flip of a coin very easily, but it's difficult to see with all the injuries we talked about, both sides of the ball, players that have regressed, you know, it's hard to see that path. And if you can say that they're going to get him back, the 2024 version of him next year, as opposed to a weaker, lesser version. I mean, they just signed him to a 3-year extension. You know, they gave him a lot of money and they were expecting him to be that, you know, that franchise left tackle. And if this is the player that he's going to be in the course of that contract, that's a terrible, terrible deal for the Ravens.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, Stanley signed his two deals at the most opportune time for him. And he gave the Ravens a hometown discount. That's the thing about it. I mean, he really did. He played for less money here than he would have played in New England. Mm-hmm. And it's going to end up probably being a 2-year, $44 million commitment the Ravens make to him if he can't play his third season on the deal. And I'd say it's not slim and none, but the odds don't look great right now of him playing that third year. And, you know, I think the Ravens have to hope that Carson Vinson is coming along and is ready to take the position by 27. All right, we'll get back to some offensive line stuff in a minute. I want to talk about the results, though, for the offensive line in terms of ample time and space, ball luck, quick, and pressure. And I just, again, group both QBs. The results are terrible. So they had 10 ample time and space opportunities out of 37 passes. So they had 38 total passes, if you look at the box score, as passes plus sacks. But you have to subtract out one spike by Huntley, so it's down to 37. So 10 of those were ample time and space, 27%. 8 of 10 complete for 58 net yards. That's 5.8 yards per play. Normally, you'd expect around 8.5 yards per play with ample time and space. 9 ball out quick opportunities. That's 24% of the time. They went 7 of 9 on those for 51 yards, 5.7 yards per play. They also had the turnover on Flowers' fumble on that. So that makes the group lousy in total, but it's not necessarily the quarterback's fault. 5.7 yards per play is right on target, 0.3 of a yard short of what you'd expect. And obviously with that kind of a sample, you're not gonna be able to say that's not enough, but 3 more yards would have been right on target. And then they had 18 pressure events. Now they had 19 ample time and space plus BOQs. Normally a pretty good game for the offensive line. They have slightly more ample time space than pressures, 11 to 10, 10 to 9, 12 to 10 kind of thing. That's the kind of relationship I want to see. 18 pressures allowed and 10 ample time and space in this game. 49% pressure by the Rams. And on those plays, the Ravens completed 6 of 14 passes. They had 4 sacks. They had 10 net yards on those plays, 0.6 yards per play. 4 sacks, 1 turnover. Turnover being the interception on that play. So it doesn't get any uglier than that. Both quarterbacks were terrible, so there's no point in dividing out these stats. I have it. If anybody just absolutely needs to know, just give me a DM on Twitter and I could separate it for you, but it's really not worth it. Rush did not run the Ravens out of any pressures. Huntley did run, I think it was, Voorhees, Rosengarten. Who got run out of a pressure? It might have been Rosengarten. Checking it really quickly here. I think the 0R was on Rosengarten. No, it was on Noteboom. So Noteboom got run out of one pressure during the game by Huntley. Other than that, no help from the quarterbacks in terms of getting them out. They both kind of held the ball. Okay, I'll talk about that. First of all, anything about the ample time space, offensive line play, time in the pocket, any such?
I mean, it's just the Ravens passing game without Lamar Jackson is just a disaster. I mean, I think that's the reality of it. They haven't put any effort into like trying to come up with something, some scheme that can help support those players. It just seems like they say, oh, we don't have Lamar Jackson, so we're just going to give you basic vanilla offense and do your best. There's no effort that's trying to like mold something to like make their lives easier. That's what I would say.
All right, we had a question come in on this. I don't know who gave this, but I answered it like in general Twitter. But I'll try and find out who this was and give credit on the second part of the show. But now's the time to address it. A question basically came in is this: that the Ravens they went after Rush. They paid a little more money, and they didn't get a return on their money. Does it make sense to pay your second quarterback at all? And I'm paraphrasing this question as best I can recall it. Or should the Ravens do what they did for years with Huntley and we really with Tyrod before him, Tyrod, and just have a quarterback who's undrafted, practice squad guy, have him be your guy for several years and try and run your scout team and try and do things in maybe perhaps a similar manner, but not as well. And just live with the lousy results when Lamar does get hurt, because any injury to Lamar generally ends the season.
So there are teams around the league that have had their backup quarterback come in and play well for them. So it's not impossible to find that. I think the Ravens have just done a bad job of identifying who that player should be. Now, if you looked at Cooper Rush's resume as a Cowboys backup, it was actually quite good. Like, it was nothing that was eye-popping in terms of the stats, but he put up reasonably decent stats for as a backup quarterback in a not great offense. The Cowboys couldn't run the ball at all last year. Like they weren't a great team, but he kept them alive when he was playing. I think his career as a backup was like a 9-6 record or something like that. So like he was able to like keep the team afloat. And I think that's what the Ravens saw when they brought him in. They did didn't give him a huge contract for a backup quarterback. It's actually smaller than what a lot of backups make. But he just wasn't maybe the right fit for this offense with this offensive line with these weapons. But I think in general, it's not a bad idea to have a backup that you actually invest in, but he has to be somebody that can actually play well for you. And they just need to do a better job of scouting who that player is going to be.
Yeah, I maybe it's a matter maybe also of resources. There are some teams who have a Kirk Cousins as their backup quarterback. Yeah. And maybe he'll never see the light of day. But there's also some teams that have, like New England, which have been willing to invest a, you know, fourth round pick or even a third round pick sometimes on a quarterback as a backup to a star. And so is that something the Ravens want to get into? Into the draft capital game, or would you rather do it by the cap way? Or do you think they should be able to do it with the cap they spend on Rush and identify a guy who should be out there? Because to me, quarterback is like left tackle a little bit. There just aren't a lot of guys who fit the mold. There aren't enough to go around to find 32 starters. Right, and then you're trying to find a backup for your guy who's really good and expect him to be somewhere close to him.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, you would use one of those mid-round picks one of these years on a player that you identify as a good option. Now they use a sixth round pick.
Six on Devin Leary, and that was a waste.
On Leary, and he turned out to be a nothing. So maybe that shies them away from doing that. But maybe you use the fourth round pick, and you can get a higher quality player there. Somebody who's slipping, who's, you know, originally like a second or third round grade, whatever reason they dropped to the fourth round. I wouldn't hate that. I think it gives you a little bit more, you know, punch in your offense potentially.
Shedeur Sanders could have been the guy this year for just that kind of price if they'd made a move on him there.
That's true. Now, obviously, he's not able to get into the starting lineup for the Browns either when they had a backup need. But I think as a developmental project, you know, a couple of years developing behind Lamar, I think that might have been an interesting player. But you know, I don't know if he's still somebody who is available. The Browns have decided he's not worth keeping around, too much of a headache. I might, you know, offer a sixth round pick to bring him into the Ravens organization.
So they end up getting, let's see, Carson Vinson was at 141 and Shedeur was at 144. So they could have made the pick there for him if they wanted to. They would have had to give up on Vinson. Dylan Gabriel was at 94. Was taken. Yeah. So who would the Ravens have had to give up to get Emory Jones? Pretty much would have been the player they'd have to give up. And these are the kind of tough choices you face with a mid-round selection in terms of where you really need to address the team's needs. I didn't think the Ravens did a bad job of addressing their needs, but they had some really awful things happen to their offensive line prospects in particular. And I mean, I was screaming at the top of my lungs about not keeping a 10th offensive lineman, and they lost Dellinger, and they lost Dellinger in the division, and then they lost Emory Jones to injury that they knew about when they drafted him, by the way. But you know, they knew it was going to be a road back for him, and they you know, of all the positive expectations are for Emory Jones, one of the things we just heard this week was that he hasn't done any pass blocking yet. I mean, come on. How quickly do you expect this guy to produce something?
Yeah, that's tough. And I mean, I was hopeful that he would be someone they could get into their lineup at some point this year. And maybe that's still on the table. But they definitely need to get him some reps.
We'll identify the mystery man who provided that excellent question in the second show. I promise I couldn't find it. Just looking for it briefly while Gabe was talking. Real quickly, Rush underperformed his opportunity set by 35 yards. Huntley underperformed his opportunity by 51 yards, 1.8 and 2.7 yards respectively below their expectation on a per pass basis. Does not get much worse than that. And you think about it, the bar was incredibly low with what expectations were, and those two quarterbacks both managed to limbo under it pretty significantly. So not impressive performance by either, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it's even for a Ravens backup quarterback situation, I feel like this is the bottom of what we've seen. We've seen at least like passable offense, but this game was just as bad as it can get. between the turnovers and the sacks and just, you know, inability to make the basic completions that you need to extend drives just wasn't there for them.
I'm trying to think of all the times in Ravens history when they've had a backup quarterback do well. And I'm going to carve out Lamar Jackson, because Lamar Jackson came in at midseason and took over for Joe Flacco and was outstanding. So you've got that. But the people are going to think of Dilfer first as being the greatest, and that's probably correct. He replaced Tony Banks. I'll tell you what, Tony Banks is on the list the previous year for replacing the Water Buffalo, and then who was the other guy? The Stone Age, Stony Case.
Stony Case, yeah.
You had Randall Cunningham come in 2001, played pretty decently when Elvis Gerback was crap in the bed. And then you had Kyle Bowler in 2006, played pretty well for McNair when McNair was hurt. Not enough to take his job, but he was the only backup quarterback who ever had 100 passer rating in a season. So it has happened a couple of times in Ravens history that they've had a serviceable backup quarterback. They just don't have it now. And this is very tough.
Yeah, you'd think that would be something that you would care about when you have a championship aspiration. You want to have an insurance plan there.
Yeah.
Be behind your most important player.
I wonder how much of that to credit to Billick, because Billick is the one guy who seemed to have a backup quarterback at need. You know, three straight years, he pulled a rabbit out of his hat, you know, making a backup quarterback into something in 99, 2000, 2001, and again in 2006. You know what? Again in 2003, I'm forgetting Anthony Wright and his drive to take the Ravens into the playoffs. He went like 5-1 down the stretch. I think it might have been a Billick thing in that case in terms of getting guys prepped. All right, I want to talk a couple of things about scheme, but I do want to kind of cut this short if we can. The RB snap division was Henry 38, Hill 35, Mitchell 2, and Ali 3. They didn't play a single snap of Pony in this game. Henry was the guy who was the designated target, getting the ball 26 of 38 times he was in the game. That's more than two-thirds of the time. Hill got the ball about one-third of the time, 12 out of 35. Mitchell and Ali didn't get the ball at all. No target, no carry in either case.
I was a little surprised that Mitchell wasn't used a little bit more in this game. He's active. He gives you some explosive ability. You mentioned the Flowers jet sweep. I think you can scheme up some plays to get Mitchell the ball in space. Just let him use his speed, make him miss a tackle, and you might have like a 20, 30 yard rush on your hands or a completion on your hands. It just seems like a missed opportunity.
Yep, it does to me as well. Some of the success they had early in the game, zone blocking related.
Yeah, I completely think so. I mean, we mentioned that earlier with the Henry drive. I don't have the exact numbers, but I would say the majority of his longer runs, especially even some of the ones that got called back by penalty, they were all zone scheme. It was all, you know. They went both directions. They went left. They went right. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it was something they identified with the defense specifically, or whether it was, you know, just something they want to introduce into their offense to maybe take advantage of the linemen that they have, it definitely opened up some gaps that Henry was able to take advantage of. And you mentioned that he wasn't getting hit behind the line of scrimmage as much. Well, I think when you're running zone, that allows, you know, pick your hole, right? And it doesn't require everybody to win their one-on-one matchup necessarily, because you're kind of, the line is moving, the defensive line is moving. And I think it kept the Rams off balance, and it really gave them an opportunity to get something moving and get some established offense. And it was nice to see. I think it's something we might see in the second half of the season if they like what they were able to do here.
There is one, I know everybody loves zone runs. Everybody's in love with the concept. Everybody's pissed off that we don't have the guys who can run it, supposedly. But there's a big negative of zone runs, and that's holding calls.
Yeah.
You get a lot of, when you run outside, anytime you run the risk, and even when you cut back, you have the risk of these being seen more. You get a much higher chance for holding calls. Gap runs, you know, if you're running duo, the chance of you getting a holding call on anybody who's involved in a duo is almost nothing. You really have to get to the corner on a run play in today's NFL to typically get a holding call made. And unfortunately, Daniel Faalele, who had made a really good stab to the armpit on, I think it I think it was on Young, right? It was on Verse.
Verse, yep.
And yeah, I mean, great stab in the armpit. That's exactly where you're supposed to strike, and yet he couldn't get his big finger, fat fingers out of there and got flagged for holding on that play, even though it didn't look like, frankly, it didn't look like it was very much impact on Verse. It was just a matter of where that hand was. It's exactly, I mean, it's perfect hand placement for him, just perfect. But to have that still get hung up is just I'm sure it's something people always point to in Fallet's game and say he doesn't ever, you know, hyperbole flows naturally from any clip played of Fallet this year. So, you know, that was certainly an unfortunate one for him. He had a false start as well in the game. But I like the other thing you said about run blocking success was that the personnel that the Ravens were putting on the field early, the form of 12 they were putting on was a little bit befuddling to the Rams in terms of how they should respond to it defensively. I say they responded to it with more nickel, and that gave the Ravens more opportunity to run against a lighter box with some, you know, with tight ends that can block anyway. And that was part of getting Henry some nice L2 opportunities on that first drive. Zone blocking, sure. I'm sure that, you know, you can point to that as playing a part. You can also point to it as playing a part in stalling the drive with the Fa'alele hold there. So one other thing I want to mention before we go off here is that the Ravens went back to 2.08 heavies per play. Now, only one of those was an offensive lineman. That was Bullock down at the goal line coming in for as a sixth offensive lineman. But they used tight ends for every other single one of those, and 2.08 heavies per play, despite the fact they only use Zaire Mitchell-Payton for 9 snaps. So very high again. That's getting back to a Roman era heaviness, not a Monken era. I'm trying to remember the last time they were ever at 2.08. It probably happened last year with Monken at some point, but 2 weeks ago against the Chiefs, they were at 0.98. Which is, that's got to be the only time they're below one tight at one heavy per play since pre-Roman times, I would think. So when Roman took over the run game as run game coordinator, since then, I don't think they had a single game under one heavy per play.
And I think in this game, it's even that number would have been even higher if they had maintained a closer score margin, because they really just went to 11 personnel a little bit at the end when they're trying to play catch up. But throughout the first half and, you know, into the second half, it was pretty much entirely 12 personnel or heavier.
All right. All right, Gabe, always great talking football with you. I'm glad we could get together and do this even under crappy circumstances like this, because it's always fun to talk with you a little bit. Tell folks where they can reach out to you and talk football if they'd like to.
Yeah, Ken, this was good to be on. You know, I think this is the first one I've done this season, so good to kind of, you know, talk Ravens with you. You can find me on Twitter at Gabe Fergie as the primary place where I'm kind of talking and interacting with folks. You know, I like to, you know, tweet during the games and stuff like that, and just put my observations out there, and, you know, willing to chat with whoever wants to talk about it. I mean, I always agree with you, but I'll try to keep it civil.
All right. Well, that's good. That's all anybody can ask for is a civil discussion about football and not name calling. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, you know, tough season. We're going to try and break this down. We hope to be a kind of a cathartic appeal to the show, that you can work through some of the issues in your own mind about what went wrong, and hopefully kind of think about it a little bit. And I find this reflection in terms of the analysis to be very cleansing, you know, in terms of what goes on. I don't always enjoy it, by the way, but it helps me process it maybe a little bit better than otherwise. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.